and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 251. I am your host, James Gilmore, and joining me for this episode is Keith Andrew.
Hello. It's an intimate edition, this one.
It is. It's up close and personal. Just the two of us today. A bit of a Mario, Luigi, Sonic and Tails, and other people who are two characters in games.
You could be Tails, because he's annoying.
Actually, when I played it as a kid, I always wanted to be Tails.
Tails could
fly, and it was cool.
He was fine, and I think I may have said this numerous times. I think these podcasts just become repeats themselves after a while. Until he started talking. He's fine until he started talking. And when it was just little animated sprites, he was quite cute, and he'd run along and die behind you several times.
Well, he had that cool thing, when he was doing the spinning stuff, he had the little tails, like, hovering behind, which Sonic didn't have. That was always kind of cool. I liked that. But
He looked best when swimming, actually. If you see him, kind of, he does a little doggy paddle.
Much like me, I think you'll find.
I wouldn't know.
Yes, you would. I've seen you with your telephoto lens. Now, they were all good until they opened their mouths, and then it became a whole horrible, squeaky
Are we talking about Tails, or just in general?
It's been quite a busy week, this one. So much so that Peter's died.
God,
well, you know,
if he did, you'd feel terrible.
No, I'd feel all powerful.
Well, exactly. I'd be very worried about anything you predicted.
No, not really. Peter's out of the country doing things, social things with other developers and that. I'm not actually sure where he is.
I think he's on his last day in Helsinki.
Oh, he's doing one of those mobile mixers and such like, right?
Yeah, he's been Helsinki for Slush, which is a conference for startups in Finland.
Of course, Finland's very behind its mobile games industry, what with Rovio and all that.
Yeah, and Supercell and a few others. They seem to get the whole mobile thing.
They do. It's a big old industry over there. So yes, he's abandoned us this week, for shame. But it's all right, we're holding the fort in the meantime. And my word, we've got plenty to cover. So, updates. An update for Android fans. If you happen to play the first Anomaly game, so Anomaly Warzone Earth, I think the full title was, it started off on PC, then came to iOS, then came to Android. The sequel came out on Android very recently. We reviewed it. It's very good. It's more of the same, but it's utterly gorgeous and good fun. It's been hovering around on iOS for a couple of weeks, but now, as of this week, it's out on Google Play. You can get it right now for £3.49, or some dollars. I assume it's around $5 in translation. But they don't do the currency conversions properly on Google Play, so I never know.
Do they not work? Could they pick anything?
Well, it seems to be done, I don't know, by some random formula. iOS got a very set formula. If it's like 69p, that means 99 cents. If it's £1.49, that means $1.99. It's all very regimented. On Google Play, it seems entirely random. They pluck a number out of the air.
Well, yeah, I have noticed, actually, sometimes you look on Google Pay and you'll get like £2.74.
Yeah, yeah.
What is that?
I've got no idea. But in this case, yeah, it'll be around $5 or something like that. You'll have to be packing a reasonably powerful handset or tablet to be able to play it, because them graphics are quite high-end, and they will kick the ass out of your processor. So quad cores and upwards, I would recommend. Also, if you happen to own a PS Vita, check us out, going all away from iOS for a change. Rayman Legends came out on the PS Vita not so long ago, but when it did come out, there were 28 levels missing. So people were a little bit up in arms, least of all Rayman himself, because his arms are always up and around, aren't they?
Because they're not attached.
They're not really, exactly. 250 podcasts are still going. Well, now you're going to get the 28 levels back. What's more, they're going to turn up on November the 28th. I wonder if that's deliberate.
Is that intentional?
Is that PR? I don't know.
Is that PR?
Yeah, you know, PR is that kind of omnipresent force thing that roams around. It's the power of PR.
Someone in the PR team thought it would be a great idea, and it would really convey the message if they launched on the 28th.
Exactly, they're staying on brand with that one. So yeah, if you have already downloaded or bought the game, then you'll be able to get those brand new levels as part of a free update. So that's nice, isn't it? Finally, and most exciting of all, at least as far as I'm concerned, Papa Sangre 2 is currently on sale for 69p and 99 cents. Now, this is one of my favorite games of the whole year on any platform at all. It's the audio survival horror game. So you put your headphones on, and you close your eyes, and you wander around your lounge or bathroom or wherever you are, and Shawnee Bean talks to you and tells you to do stuff in your ears, and you spin on the spot and walk around and do it. It's this whole audio soundscape experience. I go into it a couple of podcasts back, but trust me, it's really, really, really good. It's usually about £3 or £5. So for 69p, 99 cents, it is a bargain, and it would be criminal for you not to go and get it immediately. Hands up who likes Doctor Who.
Well, I could put my hand up, but you wouldn't see.
That's good enough. I can tell. I can already see you in my mind's eye with your hands up and your fez on and your bow tie and all that other Doctor Who gubbins, because we know you love it. Well, the BBC are about to put out their sort of special edition anniversary episode of Doctor Who, which is called Day of the Doctor, right?
It is.
It is. And it's going to be a whole big Doctor Who mashup with Time Lords from the entire scope of the Doctor Who mythology making their appearances.
Well, the ones that are still alive and haven't put on a lot of weight.
Well, yeah, some of them have been replaced by other people, and some of them just aren't turning up at all. Or have been, I imagine, they'll just use original footage and, you know, green screen it in and all that.
I don't know.
Well, we'll see. Anyway, in addition to the episode, the BBC are putting out a game to go with it. Specifically, an iPhone and iPad and Android and that game. I think it's across iOS and Android. And it's called Doctor Who Legacy. It's going to be a free-to-play title. It's made in conjunction with Tiny Rebel Games and Seed Studio. There's not a great deal of information about it as of yet. The BBC just sort of tweeted a link with a little picture accompanying it, which makes me think, Keith, as a bit of a Whovian myself, though not quite as deep as you, that it's going to be based on episodes from the 7th series.
Well, yeah, it would appear to be as looking at our story. There's a picture of Asylum of the Daleks,
yeah,
and the main picture, which seems kind of, is of the massive old TARDIS, which features in the end of the series. So
yes, so it looks like it's going to pull on inspiration from the last series. It's a free to play thing. That's pretty much all we know. They haven't given us much information about it. I'd like to be excited because it's a cool property, but is there a single good Doctor Who game?
Not currently out, not that I can think of, no. I think the offshoot of this was actually the series that was going, I forget what it was called, that wasn't especially well received.
That was the Vita one, wasn't it? There was There was planned to be a trilogy or a series, and then they pretty much just canned it.
It's been canned now because of this. But I mean, at least someone in the BBC can tell that it wasn't very good. And thought, okay, we shouldn't put out a rubbish game for the 50th anniversary. How many shows hit 50 years? Let's hopefully do something better. I mean, this looks promising in that it's certainly something that I can't remember playing. There was a Doctor Who game out by a good studio a few years ago that I remember talking about on this very podcast, actually, that was just it was a good game. You had to shift boxes around
that top-down puzzle game I mentioned.
But it just didn't feel like Doctor Who at all. It felt like a game that they'd put in some kind of naff skin and didn't really fit the franchise. And I think that's one of the big problems, is to how you convey a series where essentially the lead doesn't use much violence at all, in a video game, which is the kind of never-ending question. I mean, there were some point and click ones, weren't there? I never got around to playing.
But, I played one or two of them, actually. I think I reviewed it way back. There was a PC point and click game. Again, it's kind of done in collaboration with the BBC. They were okay. They always felt a bit clunky, and it's like you say, it's kind of a difficult thing to gamify, isn't it? It's a difficult subject matter to find a hook on and turn it into a good game. And yeah, I don't think anyone's truly succeeded so far. We'll have to see what this one's going to be. We just know it's going to be free to play, and it's expected to appear sometime around the episode, which is airing on the 23rd, I'm going to say. 21st? 23rd?
It's very soon.
Yeah, very soon. So expect it to turn up around the end of the month. If you're a Doctor Who guy, then, you know, might be worth it. Moving away from Time Lords and on to Soccer Kings, I suppose.
Soccer Kings?
Nope, that doesn't work at all. I'm keeping it, though. I'm laying my crappy links bare for all to hear. There we go. That's the kind of thing that would usually hit the editing cutting room floor.
Soccer Kings.
Soccer yeah. Kings. Yeah. So New Star Soccer is quite popular. It appeared on iOS. I think it was paid originally. Then it went free to play. It appeared on Android, and it's been a paid game kind of the whole way through. Until now, New Star Games has just turned it from a premium release into a free to play title. Now, historically, if you've followed any of the podcast stuff or anything to do with that Ostu debacle with the Whale Trail game, when games go from premium to freemium, there tends to be a little bit of a negative audience reaction. People saying, hang on, I paid money for this game, and now it's full of all this free-to-play dynamic stuff, which means I have to grind and do all this horrible stuff, and yet I've already paid money, what gives? And a quick glance at the user reviews on the Android store will reveal very similar things. I'm looking at a story that you've sent me over, Keith. And the big quote is, shame on the developer!
Yeah, it's not something, to be honest, it was covered both on my site, the Biz site, and on the main site as well. It's not something typically we would cover because gamers get angry that paid gamers gone free to play. You know, that's kind of tired now. But there was a mixture of, there was a flood of negative reviews, literally kind of, I was scrolling through Google Play and they were just never ending.
Yeah.
But what was worrying is that some of the people weren't just complaining about it going free to play and how that's evil and blah, blah, blah. Some of them, there was a practical concern that people who paid for the game were now also then being asked to pay again. To unlock parts of the game within that purchase that, you know, were previously they had access to, which it would appear is a bit of a technical oversight in that if people had removed the game from their device and then reinstalled it when this update went, then the game kind of lost all their history. Whereas if they had the app already on there and just updated it, then they didn't have to buy anything again. So there was. I'm not sure how they're going to fix that. We had a statement from them saying they're going to try and fix that.
Right. There have been some solutions in the past. I know people tend to give players who've already bought the game, like give them free currency, like lots of free currency to compensate. They have to find some way to kind of make their original purchase valid within this new freemium structure.
I think it just it's a difficult thing to do, and the developer was tweeting at the time, and to a lot of the people who were complaining, and you could almost sense they saw this coming, because essentially you can't do it later on. And they don't just mean after it's been released. They mean literally you have to set out and design a game from the word go as a free-to-play game.
Mm.
If you start out as paid and you start altering the structure later on, that's when you get a bad free-to-play game. And so to switch years after release is an undertaking, really. I was aware that it had done so on iOS, but obviously didn't generate anywhere near the amount of vitriol that this Switch has done. I'm not sure why that is. I don't know whether we're just more aware of it now and people were ready to say something negative about it. But for a game that has a lot of goodwill about it and people generally love, to see it kind of getting trashed within minutes, it was...
It's harsh. I mean, it has been kind of beloved and won BAFTAs and things for its achievements. But the developer has spoken out saying that we're looking at balancing issues and taking feedback from players, and maybe it turns out that we were a little too harsh, but please don't mistake it for making the game more challenging with money grabbing, as it's not our intention. So, and you know, given the success they've had with it, I mean, I'd be surprised if they were like willing to completely gimp the game for the sake of a few extra bucks. But it seems to have happened regardless.
Well, I mean, it coincides. We did a feature on New Star Soccer a few weeks back where we spoke to Simon Reed, the guy who made it. And literally he made it by himself. And that's still genuinely kind of the case now. It still essentially seems to be him, but he has hired a few people. Mm. And they've also signed up with a publisher for the Android version. And they've got intentions on taking it to new markets, because at the moment it is kind of a British thing. It has a bit of success in Europe, but there are other markets. I think they said Germany, where it just has no visibility whatsoever, which is quite strange considering how mad the Germans are for football.
Yeah, they're all for it.
So I think they've taken on this publishing deal to try and get it some visibility in other, you know, parts of the world. And if you want to carry on, if you want the game to carry on being successful, that is what you have to kind of do once you've kind of had enough people in Britain to play it. You know, you've got to look elsewhere. But that seems to have coincided with the Switch 2, which they claim is to bring it on board with the iOS version. You know, it's quite difficult maintaining two versions of the same game, and essentially this makes it a lot easier if they are the same game and structure. But yeah, it was all, I think it will be, you know, in a few weeks no one will remember it, this happening, but
for the time being, for shame!
Well, yeah,
is the cry. I will mention this because it's going to be big next week, I suppose. There's a Hunger Games tie-in video game coming out. It's an Endless Runner, like Temple Run, and yeah.
Just I hadn't have enough of those Endless Runners.
I know. If it's one thing we lack, it's 3D Endless Runners based on movies.
Panem Run?
It's something from the, you know, the second Hunger Games book, which I haven't read because I'm not 13.
The kind of the image we've got isn't doing it much.
It just looks like Temple Run with a ponytail, basically. But yeah, it's happening. I'm obliged to mention it because it's probably big news somewhere. But I'm couldn't care less, frankly, because it's just another one of those.
Who's making it?
I don't know, some guy. Well, actually, it's funny you should mention that, because the first Hunger Games video game tie-in thing was actually made by a bunch of really, really good, like, indie developers. People from, I think this one of the members of the Super Meat Boy team made it, and like a bunch of other like well-respected developers cobbled it together. And it was an Endless Runner itself, but it was a side-scrolling pixel art one, which you could jump up and down between different levels and was actually sort of quite playable. Whereas this one looks like an exact, you know, reskin of Temple Run, if the picture is anything to go by.
Yeah, I mean, it casts some light on the decisions. But I remember back in pre-mobile days when you get licenses come out on consoles, and they always seem to be either a third-person adventure game or a shooter, and very rarely would they work. And it seems to be like the same is happening now. Someone in some big office somewhere has seen, oh, that Temple Run game. People like that, don't they? Well, that'll fit. We can, you know, it's just make someone run. It's fine.
It's a default setting for everything. I mean, you can, if it's got a, maybe she runs in the movie and then you can tie it in. But like the Wizard of Oz game, remember the Wizard of Oz tie-in for a Temple Run? That's got nothing to do with running. There was no running in that Wizard of Oz movie. It's just they just whack it in there because it's like one of the most universally popular games. If they could turn it into Candy Crush, I'm sure they would. But even that would be a bit of a stretch for, you know, Hunger Games Candy Crush. Although quite ironic to have a film Hunger Games Candy Crush, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would work. I'm surprised they've not done that.
Yeah,
if
yeah,
they were
no
savvy, brain. That would be a better move.
Exactly. Get me on the case. I'm a regular Don Draper right here. However, in slightly more exciting news, FTL Faster Than Light, which was a game that came out on PC, I think it appeared late last year, I'm going to say. But it was a quite tough space sim Starship Commander style game where basically you take control of your own spacecraft and then you have to manage it. So you appoint your captain and your henson and all the other aspects of it, your engineer and whatnot, and you explore a randomly generated universe. And every time you warp to new areas and you encounter new enemies and you have to fight them and you take hits and then you have to put out fires in certain compartments, and it's a full-on kind of management thing. Really quite tough, but also really, really good, and got very good notes, and it was kind of well-regarded by strategy types. It's coming to iPad in early 2014. The team is doing an update, bringing it to, as a kind of, what's it called? Faster Than Light Advanced Edition. They're doing that, and alongside releasing the Advanced Edition for PC, they're bringing the Advanced Edition to iPad, which I think is really good news, because it's a really good fit. It is one of those, you know, point-and-click strategy-style games, and I reckon it will be ideal for the iPad. And what's more, we've already got a kind of cipher of it, which is Star Commander, I think it was called. In fact, I'm certain it was called. Which was essentially a kickstarted version of this game. I mean, it wasn't a direct lift, but it's very, very similar. You're controlling a spaceship and you name all your people and you know explore the galaxy. It's pretty much identical. But it wasn't as half as strong or fully featured as FTL. So having the real deal on iOS would be an absolute blinder. Do you do much of the strategy? You're quite selective with your genres, aren't you?
That's quite a diplomatic way of saying I don't really play many games.
Well, no, it's just that you know what you likes, don't you?
Well, yeah, but you know, you have to. You don't know what you like until you try the things, do you? So it's a game like this isn't something that I would automatically think I must play.
Is it a bit on the gooey, dense side for you?
Yeah, that's a problem. Anything that requires... Well, anything with numbers. I'm not good with numbers. I don't like games that are too focused on numbers.
I see.
And anything that requires a big investment of time, yeah.
Well, it kind of does. I mean, it's one of those games where it randomly generates every game, and you don't save. There's no saving. You just carry on and see how far you can go, and then you die, and you have to start all over again. So I mean, I think it would be quite good for iPads, because you just pick it up and see how far you go, and you have to worry about putting it down and picking it up again. Every bout is just a bout. Granted, it's not going to be ideal for necessarily a 15-minute lunch break, perhaps. But I do like the idea of sitting down with a tablet on a sofa and just sort of playing this alongside maybe doing other things. That strikes me as really, really good fun.
Well, my other problem is I've only got an iPad 1, so...
Oh, yeah, well...
Yeah, gaming is long gone on that.
However, if you do have an iPad capable, one up to the task, then you'll be able to get it. Yeah, you'll be able to get it, hopefully, early 2014. We'll let you know when there's an official date. But in the meantime, yeah, look forward to that one.
The new iPad capable. I like that.
Instead of the iPad 4, the iPad capable.
It's better than Air, yeah. The iPad capable.
Out and about this week, we have some very exciting new releases, one of which we've been waiting for pretty much nigh on 2 years. Oceanhorn, Monster of Uncharted Seas, is now available on iPhone and iPad. It is a top-down RPG action-adventure thing, very much in the vein of The Legend of Zelda. Very, very, very much in the vein of Legend of Zelda, in fact. All the way through its production, people have been following it. Ever since pictures appeared and videos and stuff, people are like, ooh, that looks quite pretty. And it really, really does.
Are they Welsh people?
That's quite pretty. Oh, very nice. Yeah, no, I'll never do that again on podcast. Yeah, the word Zelda kept getting bandied around from a very early point, and with good reason. I will talk about it in more detail later, for I have been playing it this week. I will reserve judgment till then. In the meantime, you can get it right now. It ain't cheap. You're going to have to cough up £5.99, which I think works out at about $8.99, maybe.
That's almost £6.
Yeah, it is. It is, indeed. But the production values are pretty pimp. I'll save my judgment till later. But yeah, Oceanhorn outright.
The water looks nice.
The water looks... having been playing it for a while, I can confirm the water's really nice. Like,
you know, so many games get water wrong.
Yeah,
Actually, I always thought the game that did water best was Super Monkey Ball, when you had to fly across the water in an open monkey ball. The water looked amazing, and you'd always fall into it.
Well, it's the new one, in Grand Theft Auto V, the water in your man's swimming pool looks phenomenally good. That's really good. And weirdly, the water in Assassin's Creed doesn't look great.
Who knows what the water will look like on next-gen systems?
OMG! Next-gen!
Has anyone compared it?
How topical. Yeah, because the PS4 got reviewed and all that, and is currently out in America, right?
It is, yeah. It's weird, isn't it? PS4 is coming out first in America ahead of Xbox One, but in Europe, Xbox One's coming out before PS4.
Yeah, I don't pretend.
And Japan doesn't get either of them until next year.
Because Japan hates the West and hates consoles that aren't Nintendo consoles. Because they're racist!
I think they even hate Nintendo consoles at the moment, don't they? I don't know. I don't know what they're playing these days.
They're still playing their DS, aren't they? They're playing VDS, that's what they're doing.
Just not playing Wii U.
No, no one's playing Wii U, I'm afraid. I suppose we touch on the PS4 thing. I don't really care about you.
No,
I really want to care, and I love the fact that it exists, but the launch lineup is not good.
And I've said a few times, the launch lineup on both. I mean, it's always the same. The launch lineup was always rubbish.
The PS Vita had a brilliant launch lineup.
Well, kind of, yeah.
Didn't help it out, but at least they had an Uncharted game, had a Wipeout game. There were at least like 3 or 4 games. I was like, yes, I would like to play those. Killzone?
The only thing on either is Forza. That's the only thing that tempts me, and that does look generally quite good. And I've not played a proper Forza for a few years. So that would that would tempt me. Not enough to part with £400 or whatever,
no.
But that would, that's the only one that tempts me. The rest, all the delays and so forth, it really does leave them looking quite sparse.
Yeah.
As to what people, I mean, I suppose PS4 owners will buy Killzone, and Xbox One owners will either buy Forza or Dead Rising, won't they? I mean, that's
Titanfall, isn't it?
Well, that's not launch, is it? So.
That's still not. Oh, for God's sake! Yeah. And that's a bit cheeky because they've been running with Titanfall quite heavily in the Xbox trailers, haven't they?
Well, they,
those adverts would, they've been leading with it.
You would. I mean, I think it was intended to be a launch title, wasn't it? I don't think they.
It's all got pushed back.
But you would one with that.
I remember being so psyched about the Xbox 360. You know, that HD upgrade thing was fantastic, and it really felt like, wow, look at this. This is a whole new generation, a whole new dimension of gaming. Whereas this is like, yep, it's a bit more HD.
But this is why we've got to the stage where all the press can talk about is how HD something is. I mean, this
720p, 1080p. Ooh.
This has been the dominant issue, and this is one of the big problems with console gaming is that Mr. Average Joe, who is playing games on his mobile, doesn't give a flying whatever. Most people, you know, we speak to normal people, they don't really understand the difference between 720p and 1080p anyway. They don't even know what you're talking about. They think you're talking some strange language. They just, whatever the guy from PC World sets their TV up to run, that's what they have it on. And so this whole debate, it completely loses people who might be potential customers, because they walk into these articles which are just all about the resolution of something on a screen, and that really no one really cares about that. No, not real people. People like us supposedly care about
exactly.
It,
but I don't talk to real people. I talk to people like you. So
real people just would think, "What are you talking about? What games are on it?" is what they would say.
Can I play Grand Theft Auto? No, sod it. I'll leave it.
Exactly. I'll wait until I can.
Yeah, precisely.
It's depressing, though, that is what these minuscule little things, yeah, are the issues of the day, and endless articles about it.
Whereas on iOS, we've got a whole range of awesome new games coming out this week to play. Games such as Stealth Inc., which is a port of a PC game. It's a sort of side-scrolling platform thing, which is really, really tough, like brutally difficult, and casts you as a little clone who's trying to escape from a scientific laboratory, and everything is trying to kill him. So you've got guards, you've got lasers, you've got drones, you've got spikes, bombs, just pretty much everything. It was quite good fun on PC. I rather liked it. I haven't played it yet, so I don't know how it's transferred to touchscreen. I think we've just reviewed it and maybe given it a silver award. I think it's come over all right. Bit fiddly in places where perhaps it wasn't on the PC. It's always a sacrifice you get transferring to touchscreen from a console-based or a PC point-and-click-based environment. But it apparently is kind of good fun. That's out right now, Stealth Inc. Also, Gameloft has thrown its oil-streaked hat into the ring of the freemium racing world. So, actually, this year's kind of been quite a freemium racing year, hasn't it? You got Real Racing 3, went all freemium. You had 2K Drive, which was originally supposed to be freemium, but then went premium at the last minute, which was a bit weird. I didn't really get on with it. Now, GT Racing 2 is Gameloft's answer, essentially, to Real Racing 3. What I particularly like about it is the subtitle, because it's not just GT Racing 2, oh no, it's GT Racing 2, The Real Car Experience. Which presumably means you're going to get stuck in traffic, break down on the M27, and then be late for picking your kids up at school.
The M27. It looks pretty.
Yeah, it looks good.
They They do, yeah. But Gameloft has a nice track record of the fact that one of the nice things about Asphalt is how nice it looks.
But that's much more hyper-real and zany and fun.
Oh, yeah, it's, yeah.
Beard stroking and simmy and, you know, people...
But they should know what they're doing, really. This is one of the things they tend to do quite well.
Also, speaking of Asphalt 8, that went freemium recently as well. Like, permanently free-to-play. Which initially caught us off guard, but then if you go and look at the actual game, it already has quite a almost freemium-like structure in place, lots and lots of menus and upgrades, and you know it could quite easily have been a free-to-play game and possibly was designed with this shift in mind. But yeah, this new one, it's a bit more simmy than that, less mad jumps and more
It seems to have a Mercedes-Benz link-up as well, doesn't it? Mercedes-Benz...
Yeah, that's right.
Trailer, the logo
featured heavily in the trailer, didn't it? But you get 13 different tracks from around the world and 67 different licensed cars, so Mercedes and Ferrari and Nissan and all that lot. Apparently, there are 1,400 events. And you get events updated on a weekly basis, apparently, so you get new ones. There's lots of noodling and tinkering that you can do under the hood if you want. I haven't gone hands-on with it yet, but I'm going to be doing it tomorrow. We'll let you know how it works out. GT Racing 2, free right now. Also, Epoch 2, which I was just talking about over on AppSpy, because cover-based shooters became very, very vogue for a while. And they're still popular now, but, I mean, ever since sort of Gears of War came out, third-person cover shooter was the thing, and now every game is a third-person cover shooter on consoles. It's quite difficult to transfer that dynamic to iOS because of the touchscreen and the dual sticks and all that, but back in 2011, Uppercut Games released Epoch, which was a kind of touchscreen-oriented version of that thing. So rather than being able to free roam around the environment, you're automatically kind of crouched behind a wall, you know, chest high wall, and you swipe left and right and you roll left and right. If you swipe up, you'll pop out, you tap an enemy and it targets on them and then starts automatically firing. So it was a very streamlined version of the cover based system. Worked quite well, bit repetitive, but you know, it did its job. The sequel came out today. It's very much more of the same. I've played it for about half an hour. It looks good, nice and smart, kind of big old Unreal Engine 3 style environments. Even the robot is quite, I don't know, I hesitate to say cute, but he's quite charming, got a bit of character to him and his movements and stuff. That's cool. It still feels kind of repetitive even after half an hour. But there is certainly tactics involved when you have to pop up and when you pop down, and there are other power-ups you can use, launch bombs and missiles and things like that. And if you're an action junkie, it might well be for you. So you can get that right now. I think it's about £2.49, $4, something like that. Finally, we'll talk about Lone Wolf, which is Bulky Pix's interactive novel game book story thing, which I haven't seen yet. Have you had a look at this yet, Keith?
I haven't. I'm just dropping it into my browser right now.
You're frantically clicking, I can hear.
Yes. Oh, there's a video.
There is. Mark's done a little hands-on video. Mark's actually started doing this. We've been doing this on AppSpy for a while, kind of hands-on preview videos, but Mark's decided to start doing it for the Wednesday night, Thursday releases. So when it comes out in New Zealand, there'll be a whole bunch of new videos appearing on PG. So you can have
Has he had to move to New Zealand to do this?
Yeah, but I think you'll find it was worth it for those 5-8 minute videos. Entirely justified.
Did you just fly out for Wednesday and Thursday, or did you live there the whole time?
No, it's a back and forth thing. You sort of come back and, you know, feed his guinea pig
there. I've got sympathy for him now.
Yeah, so Lone Wolf, Blood on the Snow, to give it its full title. It's a game book sort of choose-your-own-adventure story. As with all these things, you're making decisions and moral choices and stuff like that. The book's very nicely presented. It's got lots of slick animations and transitions between pages. But when you get into a fight, the game actually turns into a 3D turn-based battle. So it's sort of 50% game book, 50% actual strategy title. It looks kind of cool. I like the look of it, and I will be reviewing this one. It's £2.99 or $4.99. It's the first of 4 chapters, so expect more to come. You can, if you really like it, buy a season pass for the rest of them. So £6.99 or $10 will get you the whole thing. But I'm quietly sort of optimistic about this, because Sorcery 2 came out last week, the second one of that Steve Jackson game book transition, and it's really good. Like, when you play through these game books where they have proper writers doing proper writing, it really... And which I know that sounds very condescending and derogatory towards other games.
No, it's true.
It really does make an enormous difference. You're reading all this dialogue out and you're like, this reads properly and it feels believable. And even though it has got no voice acting or anything like that, it's a literal translation of a novel from 25, 30 years ago. It's got something to it. You can imagine a world in your head, as well as creating these lovely 3D maps and these very pretty animations and original illustrations and stuff. They can be really good fun, and they suit the iPad down to the ground. So I've got high hopes for Lone Wolf. It's out right now, £3, $5. Go check it out. Come sit upon my throne of games. It's that time again. Close the shutters, lock up the front door, and bar the windows. because we're locking down the chamber wherein lies the throne of games. It's been dead cold, and I'm sick of all this draft, and it costs a fortune to eat this place. And I never knew this one when I initially took on the chamber, wherein lies the throne of games. It was summer, and I had the doors open, and it was lovely, and you got summer's breezes drifting in. And it was great.
I've put a Christmas tree in the corner for that very reason. You see,
that what that is.
Yeah, and all the fairy lights around what do you get in a chamber? I don't know. Rocks.
Atrium. I don't know. Well, regardless, it's bloody freezing. British Gas are hiking their prices as well by about 8%. So I'm going to have to sublet it, possibly. I have to rent it out to passers-by. Passing monks and travellers.
Monks.
This bit is getting weird. Anyway, it doesn't matter because it's just the two of us here, and we'll snuggle together to keep warm, won't we, Keith?
Well, we always do.
Exactly. So, let's start today's proceedings with you, sir. Hop on. I've put one of those thermal blankets on the throne this week, so it should be all nice and tasty for you.
So I don't want piles.
Exactly. Very considerate host. But yeah, there will be fees later. Anyway, what have you been playing this week, sir?
I've been playing Chippy, which we've spoken about before on this podcast. Which is a time management game set in a British fish and chip shop.
British. When you say British, like an American.
Well, it is, yeah. It's intentionally, you can imagine this is how Americans think Britain is. So
that's one of those British games. Where they
it's a British game. It is a British developer, though, so that's fair enough.
True.
I can't remember which one of us did. We talked about it in the context of the indie pitch we had in London the other week.
We did.
So we're not sure how much we said about it, but essentially it's the time management spin is that you are working in a fish and chip shop and people come through the door and they have orders and you have to make those orders and give them to them in as quick as time as possible. I suppose the selling point of the game is the way it looks. It's a really, really nice looking game. It's kind of, I'm not sure how you describe it really. It's almost like,
it looks a bit like sort of paper,
yeah,
pop
paper
art almost.
I was going to say it's a bit like crepe paper kind of art. It's and everyone and the developer said this to us at the indie pitch. Everyone intentionally looks a bit depressed. They're British,
naturally.
The interesting thing, I suppose, is that most time management games are kind of played in either a top down or isometric point of view,
like Diamond Dash and that lot. Yeah,
where you see the physical character you're controlling and you tap around the screen and he or she runs around and does it. Whereas this is a first-person game in that you are just literally stood behind the counter and people come through the door. Mm. The thing about time management is that it's all about balance. And I can imagine that these are some of the hardest games to get right, to be honest, because what makes Diner Dash and some other series from other developers as well. I think one that sticks in the mind actually was Jet Set Go, which was Chillingo, which was brilliant. Probably the best time management game I've played on touchscreens. It was all about holidays. So as well as working travel agents and booking people's holidays, you then went with them on holiday and you were serving them drinks and getting them food. And so it was all kind of, and then you're on the beach and you were putting, you know, it managed to keep it fresh by giving you different locations, whereas most just tend to focus on one. But the thing it got best was the balance, and what Diner Dash gets right is the balance in that you are always constantly having things to do, and there's every possibility that you will fail, but you never feel unfairly treated. Usually you've made a mistake at some point, you've made someone the wrong order, or you've just spent a little bit too much time over it, or you've tapped the wrong button, and that's why you fail, and you can always think, oh, well, I know I can do better. Mm. So there have been some games that have gone too far that way and just made things too hard. This one, I think, is a little bit the other way in that it feels to me, I don't know whether it's because I haven't played any for a long time, but there was a period where I was playing lots of time management games, and you know, dare I say, I wasn't bad, actually. I'm quite good at reactions and all that kind of thing. And this,
as long as you have to count,
What's weird about this is it gives you a little window before the level starts where you can essentially prepare.
Yes, that's right.
So you can
Is like a fish and chip shop. That's what they do.
Well, it's very, it's true to life, but I'll get to another element that isn't so true to life. So you can sit and make a load of chips, a load of fish, a load of whatever you have in stock that someone might possibly order and sit it by the side. And so that when they come through, you can just put it in the paper and fling it to them.
Yep.
You could do that in other games. So there are lots of ones where you bake cakes or so forth, and you could make in advance, albeit it doesn't give you a window before the level starts. The level just starts. But you would, if you had a little moment, you could make it just in case someone ordered it.
Mm.
But in lots of other games, if you make things which aren't then used, so if you take the risk of making something ahead of someone's order and you have to spoil it because no one orders it, you lose money, which doesn't happen in this. So you could essentially, before you've opened the door, make everything you need, and then the game is just a question of putting them out in the right order, which isn't what time management should be. It should be that you're doing three things at once, so that you have got some already there, but someone's come to the door and they want this and you haven't made that one yet, oh, and that's burning, and so forth. Whereas this, it kind of nullifies that, because, you know, if you've got your brain on, you just think, well, you know, there's going to be about five orders of fish. I'll just make five fish now and I'll make a load of chips. And I found it incredibly easy.
Isn't there a limit to the amount of fish and chips you can put in those boxes, though?
No, it just kind of sits on top. I mean, it does get a bit complicated if you make a load of fish, because it kind of almost acts like, I don't know how to describe it, like the salt shaker. You can throw that and it bounces off the top of the screen and bounces around.
It's
a weird physics thing to the game. So you could make a load of fish and they just kind of sit on top, and actually you might accidentally pick up a fish with your finger when you're meaning to get the chips behind it. But apart from that, you can essentially make as much as you'll need, possibly need, for the seven or whatever orders that come in that day, and just pass them to them. And that kind of really does kill it for me, because I was finding it really boring. Because, it literally is, if they took that bit out, if the level just started and you had to go, then it would work. It doesn't do anything revolutionary. It is still just a time management game, apart from the way it looks, which is very interesting. But that part, I can't understand why they've done that. You need to be feeling panicked the whole time about them, because that's where the satisfaction comes from. The feeling you've got through this really panicked level where you felt like you were going to get something wrong and you don't.
Yeah.
You manage to get it all out. And by doing that, by giving you this window of letting you start the day, but there's no, wow, oh my God, I've got to get this done. Oh no, I've ordered the, you know, it just,
I clearly didn't use it enough, because I even not using that function as much. I mean, I made a couple of things and then the level would start, so I was still found myself doing a lot of multitasking. But even doing that, I did find it a bit on the easy side, and I'm not a time management.
It's not the most challenging. I mean, I'm not at the end, so I don't know if it gets incredibly challenging towards the end. But at the moment, it's not. It has a nice variety. I mean, there's flies that are flying around at a nice little side thing.
You have to pull up the bin at the bottom as well.
Yeah, exactly, when you spot it. So, it has some nice elements to it, and some thought has gone into it. But literally, you know, if they'd have gone to anyone who has played time management games a lot and showed this to them, that's the first thing they would say, well, why are you giving them this, you know, because you could just... And even if you do give them that window, well, okay, you give them that window, but you should punish them in some way if they make too many chips they don't use, because in real life, and they've made like 20 pieces of fish that no one bought, they get spoiled or, you know, put in the fridge, I don't know. But, you know, at the end of the week, if you've got food left over in a business like that, then you're losing money, aren't you? So, but yeah, it's a nice game, but not quite there for me. A little bit style over substance right now, I would say.
Fair enough. All right, then. Before I talk about Oceanhorn, we've got a very special guest joining us from far across the world. We've mentioned his name once already so far this podcast, and now let's hear from the man himself. It's Peter Willington.
Hello. Do you know what? I'm so far across the world. I'm actually in London right now, coming back from Finland.
Oh, you just totally ruined my exotic international.
London? What? Where's that?
London?
Oh. Ooh, London.
It's where the roads are paved with gold, and it's all very exciting.
They've got a queen there.
Yeah. There's a queen. I think there's a king. Do we have a king?
We have prints.
So video games. I was at Slush, checking out all the great technology and startup stuff. Have you been talking about that?
We did mention it. The Finnish sort of mobile mixery slushy thing. There was slush involved. We assumed that was because it was cold up there and ice was melting. But yeah, that's probably what it was. Did you see anything exciting? What games did you see, sir?
What games did I see? I saw a game that I'm not allowed to talk about.
It's very helpful for a podcast.
Isn't it? Yeah. I saw an alarm phone app. The really exciting stuff really was just kind of seeing, like, getting to talk with everybody. But one of the cool things that I'm kind of writing up now is there was a speech by John Riccitiello. About
if you're not familiar.
Yes, he's the CEO, I think, of EA right now, or CMO or something. He's a big guy, tall as well. I met him, and basically they were just kind of talking about like pet peeves in mobile and that sort of thing. And he was saying that, you know, he was basically saying that like console is the console model is kind of like changing, and and mobile needs to kind of create its big franchises now. And he's also apparently sick to death of people saying is mobile going to kill console, apparently, as well. I'm writing up at the moment, and it's all very exciting.
Are you in an airport at the moment right then?
No, I'm actually annoying all the people in this quiet carriage on the train that I'm on. Oh, we're moving.
Oh, fantastic. We're moving.
Yeah.
See, this is our actual roving reporter out in the field. We're getting the live feed.
I'm roving, and I was at Rovio.
Oh, see, that was worth connecting you to this call just for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you want to speak to anybody in the carriage? There's some nice people sitting around. Oh, somebody's giving me a message.
Oh, a shut up message.
Well, are you going to talk about Oceanhorn now?
Yeah, I am going to talk about Oceanhorn, but you're going to be back for us next week.
Yeah, all right, man.
You know, don't jump.
Oh, no. Keith.
Yep.
Well, okay, I'll try to. Keith, everybody in Finland sends their love. Literally everybody I met knew who you were, and everybody says that they love you. So,
well, I do have a fan club in Finland.
Some international.
Say hello to me?
One person, but it was somebody who works at the company that we work for, so... but the other person I was with didn't say hello. That's even worse. I'm going to go.
Thanks for that, Peter.
Okay, no problem. I will check out from my international location, and I'll talk to you guys soon. Okay,
nice one. See you later.
Bye.
That is proper, actual live reporting.
I feel really good about myself now.
I feel like I want to jump off a cliff.
That's a bit dramatic.
But as long as you're feeling fine, Keith. Yeah, well, sod popularity. I'm going to talk about Oceanhorn. Right, so I mentioned it earlier. Legend of Zelda-esque top-down RPG action adventure. Made by Corn Fox and Bros. Took 2 years, got kickstarted a bit. Huge groundswell of public interest because of it looked dead pretty. And rightfully so, because it does look dead pretty. And I got my hands on it a couple of days ago. It is, firstly, gorgeous. Really, just hands down, properly one of the best-looking games I've played in ages. Like we mentioned, water effects are pretty. But everything else is wonderful, too. You're hopping between these islands in a very Legend of Zelda Wind Waker kind of way, including the ship that you sail in between, which you can't skip. So you're doing the full kind of Wind Waker experience there. It starts off in full daytime. You then go underground to little sort of caverns and dungeons, and you're doing puzzles, physics puzzles, moving boxes around and unlocking doors, that sort of thing. Then you come out and it's nighttime, same environment, but just the changing in day to night. The difference visually is really, really striking. I know it's a silly little thing like, oh, it was sunny and now it's dark, but the transition between those two states is like visually really, really striking. The nighttime mode looks gorgeous, as does the daytime stuff. Dungeons are nice and sort of creepy. There are a bunch of creatures wandering around. We've got sanded goblins and things like that. Strange blue cactus wibbly wobbly things that come up and attack you. The controls are very minimal. You move around using the left thumb, as you do with these things, and there's just one action button on the right hand corner. So it's just a straight up do everything. So you use it to swing your sword, you use it to pick up objects, you hold it to pick them up, and then, you know, release to let go. Or you can fling them if you flick your right thumb. Eventually a shield does appear, and then you get an extra shield button that appears above it. You hold onto that to raise your shield. But apart from that, very streamlined, works really well. I mean, you get the occasional fiddly thing, as you always do, with these types of games that have a virtual joypad. But it's one of the better ones. It controls pretty nicely. I've been playing it for about sort of an hour and a half, 2 hours. So I've covered a couple of islands and done a couple of missions. The story sort of stands on its own two legs. It's built quite a nice little mythology about these creatures, monsters that lived in the past, and only one of them still remains, which is Oceanhorn, and you've got to go and find it. And this whole stuff to do with your mother. It's quite JRPG in that way, because, you know, parental issues and family drama and small boys with spiky hair. You know how it is. Let's be diplomatic. I doubt it's going to live up to the expectation or the hype from a public point of view. I don't think people are going to download this and go, oh my god, it's the best RPG ever. And there's no getting away from the fact that it is just so Zelda, it's unbelievable. And we were talking about this a few podcasts ago, whereby, like, because it's a smaller studio, people seem to be okay with it. Whereas if this was Gameloft, people would be like, shame on you, Gameloft. Shame Loft for copying this franchise so blatantly. I know, yeah. But it's so Zelda. It is shameless. But as an experience to sit down and play it, it is one of the better action RPGs on the iPhone. It's certainly one of the best looking ones around. And it's got some sort of fairly decent voice acting, and it's its own mythology and its own world, and it really is a gorgeous, gorgeous thing to look at. We've given it a silver award, so it's not going to wind up being the game of the year or anything, and it is a little bit dear, but it is incredibly polished, and you're going to get a lot of playtime out of it. You get 10 to 15 hours to complete it, and that only gets you, like, you know, 75% completion or something. So there's a lot of content for your money, and, you know, considering you'd pay Call of Duty lasts about 5 hours and you pay £40 for it. So, you know, £6, that's not too bad, considering. It's not perfect, and it's not the action RPG that will change the face of mobile gaming. But to think it was going to be there was a bit unrealistic in the first place. As it is a very, very solid and incredibly pretty action RPG that if you're craving a bit of Zelda action on your iPhone and you can't get it, which you can't on iOS, then this is as close as you're going to get to a sort of a mobile version of it. So it's Oceanhorn Monster of Uncharted Seas, full title, and £5.99, or about $8-9, I would guess, right now. Which, last minute review and random international interjection from Peter, brings us to the end of the podcast. Thank you once again for joining us, one and all. Thanks for being here, Keith, and thank you posthumously to Peter. He's not dead. I can't really say that, can I?
No, you can't.
Just twice, I've
nearly... It's the second you've wished him in an early grave.
I really will feel bad now if he drops dead.
I should hope so.
Because it'll really mess up my Thursdays. I'll have to find someone else to cover, and it'll be a right pain. Anyway, thanks for joining us, everybody. Join us next week, where Peter will be here in the virtual booth with us, and we'll talk about more new games and all that good stuff. Thank you for listening. Take it easy. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.